Hey everybody, welcome to this special Bacon's Commentary right here on commonsensewithbacon.podomatic.com. Before I get into the my commentary today, I want to make sure I point out to you, you may have noticed a recent addition to the Podomatic page. If you are a follower of me, some of you are, I guess, but nonetheless, you may have noticed the addition of what is called the Conservative Christmas Carol. For those of you unaware, last year, myself, along with several Chimpsy Radio hosts, put together this this conservative twist on the classic Charles Dickens story, and we recorded it and put it together, and it's a lot of fun to listen to. It's up there to listen to considering the holiday season that is upon us. I do welcome you to go take a listen to it and enjoy it. It is a lot of fun. We as hosts had a lot of fun doing it. And the final result came out to be really great, and we had a good time with it. So hopefully you go and check it out and listen to it and enjoy it as well. What I'm talking about today in our commentary is an issue which has become a rather disturbing thing in the Republican Party. You know, most people would say, would argue with me on this, but I would like to say that I don't believe I've ever truthfully smeared any other presidential candidate. Everybody knows that I have my horse in the race. My horse in the race is Mitt Romney. I've been a Mitt Romney supporter since 2008. Don't send me your emails and your messages and comments on Facebook and on here telling me how I'm wrong, blah, blah. I've done more research than you know about, and I am confident in my decision. However, I've also always been very reasonable in that if Mitt Romney is not ultimately the nominee, I'm willing to back any candidate who is. And I say that with one specific addendum, and this is the one candidate I really truly do believe is the person who is absolutely unqualified on the Republican ticket to ever be president. And quite frankly, the fact that he is considered a contender now is vastly disturbing to me, and that is Ron Paul. Now, I know making this specific commentary, I'm going to get the Paulies coming out at me in full force. I'm aware of this, and I don't care. Fact of the matter is that this needs to be said, and I am going to say it. I'm going to say it for two reasons. Number one, because it disgusts me that he's leading in Iowa right now, and he is leading in Iowa. Matter of fact, if I go to realclearpolitics.com in the Iowa caucuses, the latest poll was an insider advantage poll that was done on December 18th, just a couple days ago. Of 391 likely voters show Ron Paul at 24 points, Romney at 18, and Gingrich at 13. This is also the first time in my recent history that I can point out where Ron Paul is actually also led in a Real Clear Politics average between the dates of 12-13 and 12-18. Ron Paul with a 1.4 point lead in the Real Clear Politics average over Mitt Romney with 20.3. Now, I believe, and I'm attempting to give a benefit of the doubt here, but you know, it's hard to do that sometimes because you're kind of like, seriously, how is there any doubt in people's minds about Ron Paul? It blows my mind, especially in Iowa. Iowa, which is full of a lot of very socially conservative people, and you're going to put up, currently in the leads, Ron Paul, who has a background of association with anti-Semitic people. And I'm going to get to that claim in just a minute. But let me just make this point real fast. The benefit of the doubt I'm trying to give Iowa is they're trying to find the person who they feel is the leading contender for the spot. Now, Newt Gingrich apparently didn't hold true. And I wrote on Facebook a while back that I believed that a quote from Gingrich about a week ago about the attack on Romney about the whole Bain Capital thing, and he needs to give back the money he spent or he earned when he bankrupted and fired people, bankrupted companies and fired people. He said that was should be, you know, that was a leftist attack, and I said that could be the start of the self-destruction of Newt Gingrich, and it may turn out that I could be correct on that. Because ever since that, and you can go check the Real Clear Politics average yourself, ever since after that date, his poll numbers started to kind of droop. And I believe that was the beginning. So you've got Iowa looking at Newt Gingrich just saying, well, obviously it wasn't very good. Of course, for whatever reason, they have a problem with Mormonism and therefore a problem with Romney. Of course, they probably issues with other things that I probably have discussed in the past and don't feel like talking about anymore with Romney. But I don't care. That's not my point. So they're trying to think of who's next. Who's next in line I guess in their minds it must be Ron Paul. Kind of surprising to me, considering that there's still Michelle Bachmann out there, who's a very strong social conservative. There's Rick Santorum, who's a very strong social conservative. And there's Rick Perry, who's a very strong social conservative. Somebody explain to me why Perry's taking up fourth, Bachmann fifth, and Santorum in the latest poll all the way down to seventh behind John Huntsman. Blows my mind that Iowa would go for Ron Paul, but you know, that's just the way that it seems to be going right now. So there's the benefit of the doubt scenario, just trying to find out who's next in line. And it kind of concerns me a little bit. I've been thinking, you know, us on Chimpsy Radio, Corey, DC, a lot of we've spent a lot of time trying to explain why Ron Paul is not a viable candidate. And the fact that there are still people who believe he is a viable candidate, I think, blows my mind. Now, there's a few people I know who think he's a viable candidate, and those are the people who are tinfoil hat-wearing, brainwashed people who have really no clue about anything with Ron Paul except for the nice things that he says. And I will admit later on that he does have a couple things that you can agree with him on, but as the old adage goes, even a broken clock is right twice a day. Now, let me start off with... Now, I've taken all these things about Ron Paul. I've narrowed them down into three reasons why Ron Paul should never be president of the United States. Reason number one goes to his hypocrisy. Ron Paul is a serial hypocrite. And he's a serial hypocrite, and I'm mainly citing two specific reasons why I would consider him a serial hypocrite. Let's start with the aspect of spending. One of the areas where Ron Paul really does kind of get it right, but only in rhetoric, is when he talks about how the government spends way too much money and we need to cut down the federal budget. And, you know, he talks about different ways to do that. His own plan, he talks about cutting out $1 billion in spending in his first year as president, which all sounds all well and nice, except when you consider the fact that Ron Paul has accepted God knows how much money in government earmarks. Now, for those of you who are unaware, basically what a government earmark is basically, let's say it's time to make a budget, time for the government to put together their budget. All the different congressmen, senators, and such have the opportunity to put in their own little pet projects that they can bring home money for whatever their reasoning may be. And those are called earmarks. Now, what's funny about Ron Paul is that he puts in all sorts of earmarks. Now, I understand, believe it or not, I actually kind of understand his way of looking at his way of looking at earmarks. He says earmarks are a way for representatives to bring money back to their districts. Fair point. It really is. So he puts in all these earmarks into the budgets. Then, when it's time to vote on the budgets, he always votes against them. Now, if the budget ultimately passes, which typically they do, he still accepts the money anyway. Alex, look at this from the... Now, basically, this is what this does. This is basically an opportunity for Ron Paul to do as they all, as is said, to have his cake and eat it too. He can still go out there and say, well, I vote against all of these different earmarks and all of these different pet projects and all these different inflated budgets that I know should not be done, and yet he still accepts the money after putting it in the budgets. And then he goes off and he says, well, it should be okay because, you know, the money got approved on and I might as well take it anyway. I have seen, actually, at one point, I was having a hard time finding the article, but I know it's out there somewhere. Someone, I'm sure, has it. An article that showed that Ron Paul accepted something like $190 million worth of earmarks in 2009. This is the beginning of the Obama presidency, where Obama was spending money like it was nobody's business. And you have Ron Paul, who... At any time, and I think this is the reason why people are looking at Ron Paul as viable at this point, the biggest time when Ron Paul can make himself look viable, when the government spending going on right now is just astronomical, and he comes out and he says, hey, I think this is a horrible thing. We need to stop spending so much money. And yet Ron Paul constantly accepts this money. Now, when the stimulus package was passed in 2009, you had a handful of governors across the country who said, you know what, I don't agree with this increase in government spending. I'm not accepting stimulus dollars. Now, of course, you have some governors who stuck by that and never accepted a single dime from the federal government in the stimulus. You have some governors who got overridden by their legislatures to accept the money. You have governors who outright took it. But the whole point is that you have if you want to stand on principle, you need to be able to say, first off, he should have never put earmarks in to begin with. Should have never put earmarks in to begin with, because if he's against government spending, then you shouldn't put in anything that will increase government spending. This is obvious. Secondly, he shouldn't have accepted the money if there was the passage of the bills. That would have been standing on principle, and I would have been able to sit here, instead of berating him for this, I would be able to applaud him and say, good for you for standing on your principles. But he doesn't do that. He's having his cake and he's eating it too. He's saying he's against the spending, maybe on this aspect of voting, but he knows once the budgets are passed, he goes and takes that money with open arms. That's not the proper way to be a so-called spending hawk like he claims to be. That's hypocritical issue number one. By the way, I'm just using the 2009 example, but I can assure you he has been taking money for decades that he has been in Congress, which brings me to my next point. When Ron Paul initially began running for the U.S. Congress, he ran on the idea that there should be term limits for congressmen and senators. He felt like that the fact that these guys can literally be career politicians, as a matter of fact, he's pulled out the whole career politician concept so many times that you're almost kind of sitting there like, how can you claim that? Because you've been in office for over 20 years. Ron Paul has spent over 20 years, actually I think at some point, I think it's actually close to 30 years, because there was a number of years that he was not a member of the Republican Party. He was actually in Congress under the Libertarian Party, and then he returned to the Republican Party some point after that. But nonetheless, he ran as a Republican, ran on the idea of term limits, and yet has been there for over 20 years. Again, a man of principle would say, you know what, I should not be here for 20 years. I should be here, let's just set an imaginary number for the sake of having a conversation. Let's say 8 years. Let's say a congressman gets 4 terms, 8 years in Congress. If he would have said that's what I believe the limit should be, and then after 8 years he stepped down, he left, I could again say, hey, look, you're standing on your principles. You're saying, because here's the idea of principles. I should have said this at the beginning, but let me get this straight. The idea of principles, and so many of the different Republican candidates have been pushing the idea of principles. Let me explain to you what principles are. Principles are taking the idea as a paramount issue. You create a paramount issue, which is, this is above all what is important. And you have to find a way to make sure that everything fits into that principle. Now, if the basic principle of Ron Paul was that congressmen should have term limits, then he should be able to say that, guess what? I believe congressmen should have term limits. That is my principled view of the issue. And that means that regardless of whether or not he passes I think he's pushed for this in the past, by the way, whether he passes for a new rule that says that congressmen get term limits, he should still abide by those specific principles by saying, I believe congressmen should have term limits, ergo I'm not going to spend the rest of my life in Congress being a career politician. That should be the way it's looked upon, but that's not the way he's done it. I think he's only pushed term limits a handful of times, and yet he still spent how much time in Congress? Like I said, 20 plus years? A man of principle would be able to say, you know something? I've spent 8 years here. That's what I believe the term limit should be. I'm not staying here anymore. Now, bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, I want to make this clear. As far as I know, I don't believe Ron Paul has ever said that congressmen should spend eight years. I'm just merely using that as an example. All right? I don't know what he would call the limit for terms in Congress should be, but that's just an example, folks. Ron Paul, as far as I know, has never said 8 years is a good congressional term limit for congressmen. But anyway, but the whole fact that he has been a serial hypocrite when it comes to the concept of spending, government spending, serial hypocrite on the term limits, it says an awful lot about the man. When fact of the matter is, he should not be. He's going against his principles, and yet what do his supporters constantly say? He's a man of principle. He's the only man who stands on principle. Right. That's why he's been in office for over 20 years, and that's why he takes a lot of government spending, even though he constantly is railing against it. That's pretty irreprehensible as far as I'm concerned. Reason number two, yes, I can count, folks, is the fact that the man has, look, we have an argument that goes back to 2008 with President Obama, which is, if you were to judge a man's character based solely on his company, what does that say about the man? Now, we brought that out with Barack Obama when we talked about the fact that he is friends with Bill Ayers, who is an unrepentant terrorist who has bombed the Pentagon as well as other major buildings. We have his relationship with the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who is an anti-Semite and a racist. Obama spent 20 years in the man's church and supposedly never heard any of these such comments made. It's pretty amazing to me. But anyway, so if we were to judge a man's character based on the company he keeps, I think there's a lot of very unusual company that Ron Paul keeps. For starters, the man is surrounded by conspiracy theorists, particularly the 9/11 Truth Movement. The 9/11 Truth Movement are unemphatical supporters of Ron Paul. I've constantly seen this, one of which a great example of is the conspiracy theorist radio host Alex Jones, who, by the way, is his own brand of insanity. Let me give you an example, if I may, briefly. I remember seeing this documentary a number of years ago. Corey and I actually watched this thing together. Somebody gave him this documentary. It was actually a bootleg disc, which kind of doesn't surprise me. But it was a documentary. It was called The Obama Deception. And initially, we were interested in this because we thought it was going to actually be about Barack Obama. But no, it was actually about how Obama, according to Alex Jones, it's an Alex Jones documentary, is a man who claims that every single president, essentially after JFK, has been a puppet of the New World Order, and blah, 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 and, but let me give you an idea, just a piece from this documentary about how completely screwy Alex Jones really is. Alex Jones claimed that the Bilderberger Group, or whatever the hell they're called, who were trying to create this New World Order, were the people who assassinated JFK, in reality. So, and he shows the video, the Zapruder film video, footage of JFK getting assassinated and saying, this is what they do to you. And then there's a scene a little bit later on in the film in which Alex Jones supposedly infiltrates a hotel in which a so-called Bilderberger group is taking place. And apparently somewhere during the time, Alex Jones calls into another conspiracy theory radio show. And at that time, the fire alarm goes off and the power goes off. And Alex Jones is absolutely convinced that this is being done in order to get him and his crew out of the hotel because they're on to the Bilderberger group. And this is emphatical evidence that they are being forced out of this hotel because of a fire alarm. Let me get this straight. So this group that Alex Jones claims is in charge of the New World Order is so powerful, they can take out the President of the United States in broad daylight while he's driving in a car. But in order to get rid of the evil Alex Jones, who's trying to expose their real world views and their plans for the world, they have to use a fire alarm in a hotel. Yeah. Doesn't add up to me either. But this is a guy who Ron Paul has as an emphatic supporter. Matter of fact, Ron Paul has been on the Alex Jones show as recently as this month. Continuing, basically, he does two things. A, he gives legitimacy to the conspiracy theorists out there. And most, these conspiracy theorists, by the way, are completely and utterly insane. I have heard some of the most ridiculously crazy, psychotic things I have ever imagined from conspiracy theorists, and it blows my mind every single time. And it not only gives them legitimacy, but it shows the type of people that, I mean, apparently, I guess they say no support is bad support, maybe. It's like the no news is good news idea. I guess no support is bad support. I guess you could kind of twist it around like that. And Ron Paul welcomes these people with open arms. Not only that, but there's been a recent story that's been breaking. And by the way, there was this great, I remember when I went to the Presidency 5 event, the guy who spoke on behalf of Ron Paul went off and said, here's news the media doesn't want you to know. Ron Paul is the only guy who can beat Barack Obama, and that's the reason why the media ignores him. No, the media ignores him because Ron Paul will be easily defeated in the general election by Barack Obama. And they don't want horrible things to get out. Like, I don't know, These newsletters have been coming out since from the 1980s and 90s. They've been recently revealed through Ron Paul and some of his organizations that feature anti-Semitic and racist diatribes in these newsletters, all under the Ron Paul name. And okay, a couple people have asked Ron Paul about these things so far, and he just goes, "Well, I didn't know who was writing for them. I didn't write any of them, and I don't know who was writing them." Because by the way, none of these anti-Semitic and anti and these racist diatribes have been put forth by or have a byline attached to them. Sorry, I was trying to get my thoughts across here. And a matter of fact, this has been written about, as well as his association with Alex Jones, in a lot of detail on an article on the Weekly Standard entitled "The Company That Ron Paul Keeps" by James Kirchick. If you are unaware of this stuff that I'm talking about right now, I advise you. It's under the current issue, which is I'm trying to find the date here. It looks like the December 26th issue, which will be coming out in hard copy, I believe, next week, of the Weekly Standard. You can already read the article online, but it goes into amazing detail. I believe it's roughly about 3 pages long online. It goes into detail of the different people that Ron Paul keeps his company with. It's very disturbing. It's very worrisome, and anybody who's looking at him as a future president really needs to consider these things. Because you know something, if you've got Texas Governor Rick Perry, whom, you know, don't get me wrong, is a guy I will support, though he's not my favorite candidate, who he went under God knows how many, like a month worth of controversy over the fact that he has a ranch that had a rock that had the N-word engraved on this rock. And you've got Ron Paul with newsletters of anti-Semitic and racist diatribes for over a decade? These things are attached to his name and he's not getting any controversy? No. The media doesn't talk about Ron Paul because talking about Ron Paul could open up the floodgates of criticism to Ron Paul. So they don't talk about him because they want him to win. And Iowa, you're buying it. Wake up, you morons. Last but not least, because I don't want this commentary to go too long here, the final reason why Ron Paul should not ever be president, basically because it comes down to his crazy viewpoints on a variety of issues. Now, first off, let me just say, as I said earlier, that when it comes to issues about the economy and when it comes to spending, at least as far as rhetoric is concerned, Ron Paul does get a lot of things right. Again, as far as rhetoric is concerned, in practice, I'm very concerned about it, about Ron Paul's views. But at any rate, but again, as they say, even a broken clock is right twice a day. There are other things that Ron Paul has that completely and utterly destroys any sort of credibility he has when it comes to all these other issues. The biggest one is obviously foreign policy. And if anybody's curious, let me give you a website that I think you need to take some time to check out. It is, give me a minute, I need to pop this up here. It's a great website. I actually plugged this a little while ago. It's called 2012presidentialelectionnews.com. It is a remarkable website, but probably one of my favorite aspects about this website is that if you find under the tab 2012 debate schedule, you click on 2012 primary debate schedule and click on it, a new page will pop up, and you have the entire schedule. Oh, look at that. Okay, there they are. They have all this past and future debates that have been scheduled throughout this entire primary season. And when it comes to the future debates, it gives you links on how you can watch the videos online if you don't have them on cable. But the past debates are even cooler. They actually have video links to every single past debate that you can watch. And I highly advise, if you missed it, to tune into the December 15th, 2011 debate that Fox News and the Republican Party of Iowa put on and taking place in Sioux City, Iowa, in which you hear for the first time an exclusive example of how Ron Paul completely and utterly is disconnected when it comes to the realm of foreign policy. That's the primary issue that I want to talk about here, which is foreign policy. It took me a while to get to that, but that's where Ron Paul completely and utterly loses it. You know, look, there are probably a whole bunch of wonderful things that you can probably say about a non-interventionist way of looking at it. The probably is, like I said, maybe some credibility to it. But the fact of the matter is that we live in a world where we cannot do that. We live in a world where we cannot do that. Matter of fact, I actually asked this question a while back, and I'll ask it again now. I was curious if a non-interventionist foreign policy also relates to disaster relief. Think about this. The United States was instrumental when it came to helping the earthquake victims in Haiti in 2010, when it came to helping the earthquake and tsunami victims in 2011 in Japan earlier this year. I was very curious. Does non-interventionist foreign policy also go with disaster relief? Because nobody's asked. Everybody talks about when it comes to the idea of military action or whatever. But no, I'm curious if that also includes humanitarian efforts, disaster relief. Because if it does, then Ron Paul is a cold-hearted SOB. Getting that out of the way now. But you know what? If you watch that 2012 that debate that I just mentioned, the Sioux City, Iowa, December 15th. And again, if you go to 2012 presidentialelectionnews.com, it has a link to all of that pretty amazing stuff. And I got a huge kick. I love it. It's great. Considering I have to usually watch most of the debates after they take place. So, but anyway, so back on point here, you've got his foreign policy that's completely out of whack when it comes to how he views the world. Matter of fact, this is how bad he goes when it comes to his foreign policy. Now, a lot of people, and this is the argument that's been said a lot about people when they get into government. And, you know, I'm sure someone's going to use this argument when it comes to Ron Paul and earmarks, but as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't fit the mold because he's not an executive. But they say often as an executive, when you get into that position, you often have to use actual facts to make your decisions. Now, here's an example of a fact that Ron Paul has emphatically shot down. During that December 15th, why I keep saying the year first, I don't know, the December 15th debate in Sioux City, Iowa, Michelle Bachmann quoted an IAEA report that had come out recently that showed that Iran is actually on their way to developing a nuclear weapon. And then Ron Paul comes out and he says, well, no, that's absolutely not true. There was no IAEA report that said anything of the like. Really, Dr. Paul? Can I read to you a little article I found here? This is from FoxNews.com. It also was derived from the Associated Press. Headline reads, Iran drawing up response to IAEA nuclear report. Huh. First paragraph reads like this. Iran says it is drawing up a detailed response to a recent report by the UN nuclear watchdog alleging Tehran has conducted secret experiments whose sole purpose is the development of atomic weapons. Huh. Let's move on to the next paragraph. Ali Akbar Salehi, know who that is, says the in-depth technical response will show the International Atomic Energy Agency's November 8th report on Iran's nuclear program is wrong. State TV comes amid a far-reaching diplomatic and media campaign by Iran to challenge the IAEA report, which suggested for the first time that Iran is using the cover of a peaceful nuclear program to produce atomic weaponry. So, Ron Paul, look at that. November 8th, IAEA report that says, apparently, that Iran is on their way to putting together nuclear weapons. Holy freaking crap! You're going to tell me Ron Paul was wrong about something? It turns out that he was wrong. And this is my point about him. Ron Paul loves to create, has his own worldview. He has his own worldview, and he will say whatever it takes to believe his worldview is actually correct. He emphatically came out saying that no, there was no IAEA report that suggests that Iran is trying to produce nuclear weapons. There was a report right there, November 8th, and by the way, I was trying to find a news article because I knew that would be a lot shorter, but believe it or not, you can actually go online and you can Google search IAEA report of Iran and you can find the report itself. You can also find reports from the IAEA's actual website which show links to these reports. Fact of the matter is that, you know, Ron Paul can disagree with the report, but there is no goddamn way, pardon my language, that he can kind of go off and claim that it's somehow never existed. Because that's just an absolute falsehood. And he has been using falsehoods and lies to create his own worldview as far as I can go, all the way back to 2008, when he ran for president last time. The fact of the matter is, and there's other kooky views he has, I'm coming up on 30 minutes here, I'm at 30 minutes, I'm not going to go into his kooky domestic idea of legalizing all drugs, because that's a totally different animal. I'm not going to get into that now. But just based on all these different reasons, Ron Paul cannot be president. And listen, Iowa, I get it. You're trying to find someone out there who you can latch onto because you are too Mormonist, if you will, to latch onto a Mitt Romney, even though there was a poll, came out a couple polls before the two Ron Paul polls. It was a December 13th Rasmussen report. 750 likely voters voted Romney as their top choice. Or excuse me, 750 likely voters were the sample size. Let me make sure I say that correctly. But 23% of them said that Romney was their top choice. Let me try to make that clear. So it is obvious that they're trying to find, it's not that they don't like Romney or they don't respect Romney, but they're trying to find someone that they can latch on to. And the fact that they're going with Ron Paul, I think, is an epically disgusting, horrible decision, and they need to really start rethinking their decision right now on that, because let me tell you something, if you put legitimacy into the Ron Paul presidential campaign, I am telling you, you are absolutely and emphatically, and I'm loving that word, it seems, this entire half hour, idea that a Ron Paul presidency is serious, and the fact of the matter is it is not. It is completely and utterly unserious, and we need to recognize it as such. So please, Iowa, if you want to avoid the jokes and rumors that Iowa has become a less serious and less a caucus that matters less and less as time goes on, do not select Ron Paul when your caucus comes up about 2 weeks from today. 3 weeks from today. Something like that. 3 weeks. 2 weeks from today. I'm telling you, math is not my strong suit, ladies and gentlemen. All right, folks, I'm done with this commentary. Bacon's commentary, commonsenseofbacon.com, podomatic.com. Don't forget to check out the Conservative Christmas Carol. It's a lot of fun, and I'm sure you all get a kick out of it.